After the war, the release of records of the International Red Cross showed that in South Vietnamese prison camps, where at the height of the war 65,000 to 70,000 people were held and often beaten and tortured, American advisors observed and sometimes participated. The Red Cross observers found continuing systematic brutality at the two principal Vietnamese POW camps, at Phu Quoc and Khi Nan, where American advisors were stationed. By the end of the Vietnam War, 7 million tons of bombs had been dropped on Vietnam, more than twice the total bombs dropped on Europe and Asia in World War II, almost one 500-pound bomb for every human being in Vietnam. It was estimated that there were 20 million bomb craters in the country. In addition, poisonous sprays were dropped by planes to destroy trees and any kind of growth. An area the size of the state of Massachusetts was covered with such poison. Vietnamese mothers reported birth defects in their children. Yale biologists using the same poison, 245T, on mice reported defective mice born and said they had no reason to believe the effect on humans was different. On March 16, 1968, a company of American soldiers went into the hamlet of My Lai Phor in Quang Nai province. They rounded up the inhabitants, including old people and women with infants in their arms. These people were ordered into a ditch, where they were methodically shot to death by American soldiers. The testimony of James Dersey, a rifleman, at the later trial of Lieutenant William Calley was reported in the New York Times. Lieutenant Calley and a weeping rifleman named Paul D. Medlow, the same soldier who had fed candy to the children before shooting them, pushed the prisoners into the ditch. There was an order to shoot by Lieutenant Calley. I can't remember the exact words. It was something like, "Start firing." Medlow turned to me and said, "Shoot. Why don't you shoot?" He was crying. I said, "I can't. I won't." Then Lieutenant Calley and Medlow pointed their rifles into the ditch and fired. People were diving on top of each other. Mothers were trying to protect their children. Journalist Seymour Hersh, in his book My Lai Phor, writes, "When Army investigators reached the barren area in November 1969, in connection with the My Lai probe in the United States, they found mass graves at three sites, as well as a ditch full of bodies. It was estimated that between 450 and 500 people, most of them women, children, and old men, had been slain and buried there." The Army tried to cover up what happened, but a letter began circulating from a GI named Ron Reidenhauer, who had heard about the massacre. There were photos taken of the killing by an Army photographer, Ronald Haberly. Seymour Hersh, then working for an anti-war news agency in Southeast Asia called Dispatch News Service, wrote about it. The story of the massacre had appeared in May 1968 in two French publications, one called Sud Vietnam en Lutte, and another published by the North Vietnamese delegation to the peace talks in Paris, but the American press did not pay any attention. Several of the officers in the My Lai massacre were put on trial, but only Lieutenant William Calley was found guilty. He was sentenced to life imprisonment, but his sentence was reduced twice. He served 3 years. Nixon ordered that he be under house arrest rather than a regular prison, and then was paroled. Thousands of Americans came to his defense. Part of it was in patriotic justification of his action as necessary against the communists. Part of it seems to have been a feeling that he was unjustly singled out in a war with many similar atrocities. Colonel Orrin Henderson, who had been charged with covering up the My Lai killings, told reporters in early 1971, "Every unit of brigade size has its My Lai hidden someplace." Indeed, My Lai was unique only in its details. Hersh reported a letter sent by a GI to his family and published in a local newspaper. "Dear Mom and Dad, today we went on a mission, and I am not very proud of myself, my friends, or my country. We burned every hut in sight. It was a small rural network of villages, and the people were incredibly poor. My unit burned and plundered their meager possessions. Let me try to explain the situation to you. The huts here are thatched palm leaves. Each one has a dried mud bunker inside. These bunkers are to protect the families, kind of like air raid shelters. My unit commanders, however, chose to think that these bunkers are offensive. So every hut we find that has a bunker, we are ordered to burn to the ground. When the 10 helicopters landed this morning in the midst of these huts and 6 men jumped out of each chopper, we were firing the moment we hit the ground. We fired into all the huts we could. It is then that we burned these huts. Everyone is crying, begging, and praying that we don't separate them and their husbands and fathers, sons and grandfathers. The women wail and moan. Then they watch in terror as we burn their homes, personal possessions, and food. Yes, we burn all rice and shoot all livestock. The more unpopular became the Saigon government, the more desperate the military effort became to make up for this. A secret congressional report of late 1967 said the Viet Cong were distributing about 5 times more land to the peasants than the South Vietnamese government, whose land distribution program had come to a virtual standstill. The report said, "The Viet Cong have eliminated landlord domination and reallocated lands owned by absentee landlords and the GVN, Government of Vietnam, to the landless and others who cooperate with Viet Cong authorities." The unpopularity of the Saigon government explains the success of the National Liberation Front in infiltrating Saigon and other government-held towns in early 1968 without the people there warning the government. The NLF thus launched a surprise offensive. It was the time of Tet, their New Year holiday, that carried them into the heart of Saigon, immobilized Tanzanut Airfield, even occupied the American embassy briefly. The offensive was beaten back, but it demonstrated that all the enormous firepower delivered on Vietnam by the United States had not destroyed the NLF, its morale, its popular support, its will to fight. It caused a reassessment in the American government, more doubts among the American people. The massacre at My Lai by a company of ordinary soldiers was a small event compared with the plans of high-level military and civilian leaders to visit massive destruction on the civilian population of Vietnam. Assistant Secretary of Defense John McNaughton, in early 1966, seeing that large-scale bombing of North Vietnam villages was not producing the desired result, suggested a different strategy. The airstrikes on villages, he said, would create a counterproductive wave of revulsion abroad and at home. He suggested instead, destruction of locks and dams, however, if handled right, might offer promise. It should be studied. Such destruction doesn't kill or drown people. By shallow flooding the rice, it leads after a time to widespread starvation, more than 1 million, unless food is provided, which we could offer to do at the conference table. The heavy bombings were intended to destroy the will of ordinary Vietnamese to resist, as in the bombings of German and Japanese population centers in World War II, despite President Johnson's public insistence that only military targets were being bombed. The government was using language like "one more turn of the screw" to describe bombing. The CIA at one point in 1966 recommended a bombing program of greater intensity, according to the Pentagon Papers, directed against, in the CIA's words, the will of the regime as a target system.